Everyone, welcome to Talk Nerdy. I'm your host, Cara Santa Maria, and it is Monday, December 7th. In just a few minutes, we're going to be chatting with activist and reporter Zach Coplin. But before we get started, I just wanted to thank those of you who made Talk Nerdy possible this week. Over at the Patreon portal, which you can visit by going to www.patreon.com/talknerdy. I want to thank a number of supporters this week. I want to thank Elena Scott. Your goodies are on their way to you. I want to thank Phil T-Bear. I want to thank Ken Pfeiffer, Brian Holden, and also Jeffrey Sewell. Thank you guys so, so very much. Oh, and Warren Rogers as well. Thank you. I also want to thank via the PayPal portal, Nick, I'm going to have a hard time with this name, from London. I want to thank Nick Lugton. That is probably not even close. But thank you, Nick, both for your support and for putting up with me butchering your name. And I want to thank another gentleman who would prefer I not read his name off, all the way from Thornton, Colorado. Thank you guys so, so very much. And remember, you can support the podcast in a lot of different ways, not just financially. You can tell your friends and family about it. You can rate and review on iTunes and Stitcher. And you can just visit the website, carasantamaria.com, click around, learn more about what I'm up to, and even visit the Talk Nerdy store. And don't forget that for a limited time during the holidays, if you use the offer code NERDYHOLIDAY, you will not only get 15% off of your order, you'll also get a free gift from one of my podcast partners. All right, guys, without any further ado, you probably know him. You probably have followed his work. He is a reporter and also a very young activist who is leading the charge to repeal Louisiana's creationism law. Here he is, Zach Coplin. Zach, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's always a blast.
Of course, I'm looking forward to it. So is it a school day for you?
It's actually my very last day of school ever,
which is exciting. Last day of school ever? Wait, so you're a senior this year?
I'm actually a super senior, sort of. I'm graduating in 3 years plus change, but I took a year off, so sort of however this works out.
Nice. So you're kind of, you took a year off, but you're graduating early, so you're sort of just right on track.
Yeah, roughly.
Nice. So wow, 3.5 years, that's a lot to do. And you're in Texas now, right?
Yeah, I've been there since 2011, and it's always a fun state to live in when it comes to science education.
Yeah, well, I'm from Texas, so yeah. You and I, yeah, we're cut from the same cloth being from the South. We know exactly what we're dealing with. Although, would you venture to say that Louisiana is worse, or is the issue that because textbooks are made in Texas, that we actually have, we being Texans, a worse track record?
That's always been a hard question. So the legislature in Louisiana is worse. That's the state that we've had legislators proclaim their faith in witch doctors, these men who are semi-clothed in the dust, shaking some bones, again, semi-clothed in the dust. And the same politician, Senator Albert Guillory, once explained, you know, there was this time when scientists, they call people heretics and burn them alive, and that's why we can't have evolution. Or the other senator, Senator Mike Walsworth, who said, you know, I want an experiment that proves evolution. He asked for science teachers to show him an E. coli turn into a person right in front of him before he'd vote for evolution. So that's our legislature. But then in Texas, we have Don McElroy, the former State Board of Education chairman, who proudly proclaimed that someone needed to stand up to the experts. So I'm not really sure which one you pick as worse. It's pretty close.
Pretty close. And you have decided, why not? Let's just live in both.
I know. Not really thinking that hard about it.
So you were born and raised, I'm assuming, or at least raised in Louisiana, because that's when your activism seems to have at least hit the national stage.
So I lived in Baton Rouge till I was 18. My family moved to New Orleans when I moved to Houston.
Oh, okay. I see. So you grew up in Baton Rouge and then you moved to Houston to go to school.
Yeah.
And what are you studying?
I just finished my history major.
Yay. Are you so excited?
I'm more relieved, to be honest. I'm actually, as much as the stuff in school was very interesting to me, it's never really been a passion, and science policy has always been much more fun for me. So I'm happy to have more time to work on what I care about.
Nice. And so why did you decide to study history then and not, you know, sort of public affairs or policy or government?
So honestly, I've never really been, the impression I've gotten of sort of poli-sci government classes in school, they're actually not really hands-on. And history is more of the type of thinking that fit with what I was actually working on.
Interesting. And it does seem like when you are talking about political activism, when you're talking about trying to improve science education, the more you know about the past, the more that you can help not reinvent the wheel.
And honestly, a lot of the people in this field have been sort of historians of science. I mean, Dr. Barbara Forrest, who I've known for years and years, is, I think the best description is probably the foremost historian of the intelligent design movement, is the best way to talk about her. And so that's sort of, it is fitting.
Yeah, I guess you, in order to really fight against this movement that is, you know, breaking down science education in this country, you really have to understand who your enemy is.
Yeah, and it's interesting, a lot of the tools translate over into digging into all the old stuff that they've said that they don't want to come out, where they've had an old interview with the local newspaper where they say, we sponsored a law because we want creationism, and that disappears in the archives. And they go on the record and say, oh, this isn't about creationism, and someone has to go pull out that interview and find it from years and years ago and say, actually, when you were talking to your constituents, you said explicitly you were doing this because it's creationist.
Yeah, I think that's an important conversation to have, is the rhetoric, the difference, quote unquote, between intelligent design and creationism, which, of course, as we know, there isn't really a difference. But before we jump into that, just for people who are listening, who I'm assuming that almost all of my listeners kind of have followed your work or remember you from the news. But just as a little bit of primer, when did you first decide to, like, when did you first become active in this sort of activist role? Because you're only 21 now, right?
22, actually.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Slight difference.
When I remember being 21 and 22, yeah. And yes, it is a big difference at that point. But you were much younger when you first started speaking out.
Yeah, so this was about 6 years ago when I was just 17.
Okay.
Roughly 6 years, a little bit less. And so we've had this law, actually, to go back a few years before that. Since 2008 in Louisiana, we have what's called the Louisiana Science Education Act. And this allows the critiques of controversial theories like evolution and climate change to be taught in public school science classrooms, because we all know that the theories that really need critiquing are evolution and climate change, and they're very controversial, and the scientists think they're controversial, at least in Louisiana. Anyway, so science teachers are allowed to bring supplemental materials that they just sort of pull off the internet to critique evolution, because it's sort of the rhetoric is that it's a theory in crisis, it's falling apart, the scientists don't accept it, and there's these alternatives that can be taught.
And so the textbooks that most of them are using are still legitimate science textbooks. They're actually pulling stuff from like Answers in Genesis off of the internet.
So the texts that are being used by the schools are stuff like Ken Miller's, the textbook that, if anyone doesn't know Ken Miller, he's a great, great educator who wrote most of the mainstream Pearson science textbooks, biology textbooks. So those are the textbooks that are being used. But the materials are just stuff pulled off sites. There's a site called Text Add-ons made by a local Louisiana creationist where he basically says things like, scientists don't understand the Cambrian explosion, so evolution isn't true. And he has a distinction about, you can say this in the classroom, but don't say the words intelligent design, because then you might get in trouble. And sort of going exactly how to use this law to skirt around the Constitution and teach religion in the classroom.
Gotcha. And so is it established then in Louisiana that, or was it at the time, that if you did use those kinds of key words like intelligent design, you actually were breaching the Constitution, or was that not really followed up? Was nobody actually prosecuting that?
So, yeah, that's more of the situation where the creationists who are involved in the policy are actually pretty savvy about what you can and can't say and how to get around the law. or at least there hasn't been a court case on this specific, on supplemental materials being used under the Louisiana Science Education Act. That's not really been decided yet. I assume if a court ever takes it up, it'll become unconstitutional like the rest, but it hasn't been touched. So that's where they're pushing it right now. But on the ground, you find that most teachers who are creationists really just don't care, which is why you find in Louisiana, or sorry, in Bossier Parish, Louisiana, it's in the north side of the state, you've got teachers, and let me quickly pull up the quote from this, but you've got teachers who are teaching literally the book of Genesis in their science class, and this is from Bossier Parish. It's probably the worst parish in Louisiana when it comes to this, but that's also, again, like the Louisiana comparison, that's a pretty hard thing to decide which is the biggest problem. Anyway, so this is from Shauna Creamer, a teacher at Airline High School in Bossier. She wrote to her principal, Jason Rowland, "We will read in Genesis and them," she said them, "some supplemental materials debunking various aspects of evolution from which the students will present." So she sort of got the supplemental material part under the law, but didn't really get that you can't say straight out, open up the book of Genesis and read.
Yeah, like I'm reading from the Bible in a science class.
And then there's another teacher in this school. A parent complained to that principal, Rowland, that that one of their other teachers taught evolution was a fact and said that this teacher was pushing her twisted religious beliefs on the class. Then the principal responded, "I can assure you this will not happen again." And I've actually confirmed with students, they all asked for anonymity, but I actually had coffee a few months ago with some students at Airline High who confirmed all of this and said, yeah, we've had some teachers teach creationism, we've had other teachers who've told us that they're not allowed to teach evolution. And honestly, at Airline, this is sort of the least of the problems, where prayer is basically mandatory. They've had their health teacher force kids to read the Bible in class, and sex ed is really non-existent, and they even have gender-segregated gym classes, because boys and girls can't be in the same gym class. So this is, I mean, if we're talking about problems in the schools, this is just the tip of the iceberg here.
So is the issue that, you know, there's this law on the books in Louisiana that allows for alternative, you know, theories, quote unquote, to be taught. Are teachers allowed? I mean, is there pushback when teachers do teach legitimate evolution in their classroom?
I think there is. I mean, there's been way less actual research done on pushback compared to what's actually being taught. But we've all I mean, it is sort of understood that when teachers teach evolution and are forceful about it, I guess, and say this is real, this is science, there tends to be people who complain to the principal, and depending on the principal, they might say to their teacher, "Don't teach this." Either they don't believe in evolution, or they don't want the fuss with the parents, and so just stop it. And it doesn't matter what state standards and what's actually required. They say, "Don't teach this. It's too controversial for us."
So controversial.
Yeah.
And so this law has been on the books, and you, back when you were 17 years old, kind of took up the cause and said, I want to fight back on this. I want to do something about this. And what was that process like for you?
I was a little bit more naive about the situation, where when it passed, I was like, I remember the day it passed, a family friend was walking by our house, and just like, my dad's always been in Louisiana politics. He was chief of staff to two different governors. And so I always sort of heard these kind of things over the dinner table, where it's like, oh, someone sponsored a creationism law. This is really dumb. And our thought process was like, this wouldn't pass. Governor Jindal's a biology major. He'll veto a creationism law if it comes to him. And then I remember walking by my house one day as a family friend who just says, "Hey, did you hear that Jindal signed the creationism law?" And it was just, it was a shock. It was like, this is the dumbest thing I've heard. This is clearly wrong. Creationism isn't science. It doesn't belong here. And so I just said, someone will take care of this. It'll get repealed within a year. We all know this is wrong. And I waited a year, and no one did anything. And I waited another year, and there started to be news about how local school districts were all talking about using the law for creationism. And I was like, at that point I realized maybe people don't think this is as dumb as it is. But I still thought, like, I thought surely when you go bring this to your elected officials and say creationism isn't science, we shouldn't have this law, they would just do the right thing. We organized a campaign that had the support of 78 Nobel laureate scientists, major science organizations, local clergy, pretty much local students, of course, pretty much everyone you'd ever want to repeal a law like this. And we went into the Louisiana Senate Education Committee with this repeal, thanks to New Orleans Senator Karen Carter Peterson, who's been leading this with me for years and years. And we heard from people like the now, thankfully, former Senator Julie Quinn, who just told us after we gave her the list of Nobel laureates who asked to repeal this law, said, I'm sick and tired of hearing from people with little letters behind their names. That was the response we got.
Oh, my God.
It was surreal. That's the only word for it.
Wow. And so at this point, you're a kid. You're in high school.
Oh, and the room was filled with a bunch of high school kids who it wasn't just insulting the Nobel laureate. She was insulting the students in the room. It was horrifying. And that was sort of the wake up call. Like, maybe we're gonna actually have to, just show the world how wrong this is. And show the world what they say, because all the things they said. Every year I sort of joke we have a new celebrity in the legislature, because someone will say something very foolish and they'll go viral on YouTube. Every single year, it never fails.
Yeah, it does kind of seem like Louisiana, Texas, Florida, like you hear things happening in these states. And again, I can say this is where I was born and raised. I lived there until I was 24 years old in Texas. And every so often you have these things, they hit the news and people have gotten to the point. And I think that this is the frustration. They've gotten to the point where they just kind of roll their eyes and go, yeah. That's what I expect to come out of Texas or Louisiana or Alabama or Florida. And so how do you change that national viewpoint? Say, no, we can't just be the butt of the joke. We can't be so regressive. Like help us. There are people here who don't want to live like this.
Yeah. I mean, it's also interesting where Louisiana, and I do this out of love for my state, where I talk about, I mean, people get very angry because I'm embarrassing Louisiana. I'm making us look bad. And there is something to say for that, where this isn't just a Louisiana or a Texas problem when it comes down to it. I don't know if you saw, there was a poll done by the American Association for the Advancement of Science, I think, published in Science a few years back, where they polled biology teachers and found that about 15%, roughly, were teaching creationism outright in their classes. And another 60% of teachers were not teaching evolution for either because they didn't believe it or they didn't have enough knowledge or they didn't want controversy, which left total 27% of teachers who did the right thing by their students. And they found this was not just in the South, not just in rural districts. It was all over. It was teacher by teacher. Just, it really depended on if your teacher was a creationist or not, or was afraid of teaching creation or teaching evolution. And so this isn't just a Louisiana problem. But on the other hand, Louisiana and Tennessee are the only states with creationism laws passed, and there's only like seven other states, like Texas, and I forget the rest off the top of my head, that have school board policies that do or state board policies that do essentially the same thing. So we do have the political problem here, not just the education problem.
Yeah, like across the country, there's still kind of a pressure, whatever that might be, the religious influence, the kind of social and maybe the political pressure. But you actually have in Louisiana and Tennessee something on the books that protects this.
And it's an important point to mention, where this law is essentially a liability shift. In New York City, if you're teaching creationism and it's found out, the school district can just fire you. In Louisiana, you're teaching creationism like this woman in Bossier, and it gets written in Slate where I wrote it up, and the school district first supports her. But let's say someone wanted to take action, she can just say, take it up with the state. I'm following the law. You can't do anything to me.
Yeah.
And that's what we're seeing, is that's what these laws are for.
And so you've been fighting this now. I mean, this basically what's dubbed the creationism law in Louisiana since you began as a teenager. And have we seen progress, or has this just been something where, like with the Scopes trial, you'd need an individual to step up and say, I'm willing to be, you know, a pawn in this. Like, I'm a teacher who's willing to get arrested, or I'm a teacher who's willing to go up and fight and actually go through the legal system in order to fight this law.
Until about a week and a half ago, I think it was, I would have said we need someone to file a lawsuit. And I still think that's the case. We need a brave teacher. We need a brave student. And this does come with a great deal of personal risk because, I mean, the kids I talked to in Bossier, Louisiana, who were being taught creationism, they were afraid to be – they all – I spoke to a dozen people who had gone to that school or are currently at that school, and they were all afraid to use their names, every single one who was living in that parish, because they had seen threats like people – and this whole thing was actually started from a complaint by the ACLU. And people were like, if we know who talked to the ACLU, we'll drag them across the parking lot behind our pickup truck. And they were seeing threats like that. And so they were afraid to even be associated publicly with anything they were telling me. And so it's hard to find someone to sue. Now, about a week and a half ago, John Bel Edwards became the – he was elected to be the next governor of Louisiana.
Okay.
And he's a Democrat. And that is a very big change from Bobby Jindal, who, while he is not a creationist in his heart, I believe that Jindal, who is a Brown biology major and Rhodes Scholar, is very intelligent. He's one of the most intelligent men who's ever led Louisiana. He just has no moral core. So Jindal was 100% behind the creationism law and every other bad idea that anyone ever had in an attempt to run to the far right of the presidential race, which I have to say with a great deal of pleasure he failed at, so sort of having no morals doesn't always win.
And I'm seeing that there are articles online. There's an article that I found here in Mother Jones about how it's literally called Bobby Jindal's Biggest Troll is His Friend's 21-Year-Old Son. And is this because he has a relationship with your father, since your father has worked in politics for so long?
So... and this is a long story, but so my dad was chief of staff to Governor Foster, who was, and also Governor Kathleen Blanco, and Foster was a Republican and Blanco was a Democrat. And they were the two governors before Jindal. But Jindal and my father both got their starts under Foster and had known each other for years. And so I've written about this where it's like, when my dad said Bobby Jindal isn't a creationist, it's because he knew Jindal and thought Jindal was, and honestly had a great deal of respect for Jindal as someone who was.
Because he knew the difference between Jindal like behind closed doors and Jindal like doing the speeches.
And honestly, Jindal, when Jindal first was in Louisiana, it's honestly one of the saddest stories for me. Is I'm a Democrat, but I wish I could have voted for Bobby Jindal. I wish he could have been someone I could have supported even as a Republican and voted for.
Yeah.
I because you know what? It counts that he's from Louisiana for me. But he just was so far wrong, and there was so much hope for him when he first became when he first got into Louisiana politics. He was a 24-year-old Rhodes Scholar. Everyone who knew him thought he was brilliant, and he was put in charge of the hospitals at 24 years old in Louisiana. And he was a congressman, very young. He was the youngest governor, and there was so much hope for him to do good, and be smart, and make and he had a lot when he was endorsed by, like, sort of like, Black New Orleans organizations before, like, which is an incredible crossover appeal when he first ran for governor, and it's just it's sad how much things have changed.
And so do you think that this is one of those situations? You know, we talk about this a lot, I think, at a more nuanced level, though, with Barack Obama and with some of the decisions that he made in office that a lot of progressives are really not pleased with the decisions that he's made with regards to immigration.
Keystone.
Yeah. And Keystone. Yeah, exactly. And so and we have this conversation a lot, which I think is a deeper philosophical question, which is, you know, do people who ultimately want to be in power, are they already somewhat corrupted people, or do they become corrupted as they get into these more power positions? Or is it just that you have to play the game? You literally have to give and take once you get into a political position. You cannot stand on your morals and your truths and your interests the whole time, because you won't get anything accomplished unless you give and take.
And that's a hard question. And I've always been a big believer, especially watching my dad, that most people in politics are there for the right reasons and do good things. And you hear...
Yeah.
I was there for Katrina, where he was in charge of the recovery. And I watched him and his team and people. We had staff from the governor of Virginia at the time, Mark Warner, sent down his chief of staff, who worked 24 hours at like 48 hours at a time to save people in New Orleans. And you can see real good being done from these people who are killing themselves, not sleeping, not eating, just working in this crisis. Now, I tend to believe a lot of people are doing good, but then you do have people like Jindal. Who Jindal jumped on every bad decision that could be. I mean, he held a prayer rally with a hate group. He announced that he got reprimanded by the Prime Minister of Britain when he was in Britain for saying there was Muslim no-go zones in parts of London, which of course is not true. And just basically everything ridiculous and far out there that Jindal thought he could use to separate himself, he jumped on. And I think for a man as smart as he was very dumb about his politics.
And you think that is because he surrounded himself with the people that would, of course, tell him the right decisions to make to get elected, but that, you know, were in direct conflict with his actual core moral beliefs?
Well, I think that, and I think I just don't think he had core moral beliefs when it came down to it.
So it was much more important to just be in politics and be in a position of power than it was to actually affect change.
I mean, I say this all with a disclaimer that I'm not in the governor's head, and I don't know what he's thinking.
Yeah.
but this is years of
But you have
watching
an interesting
him.
Perspective. Exactly. Like, this has been a character to you that you've been studying pretty specifically, and also have somewhat inside knowledge about, or at least some kind of emotional knowledge about, which is something that other people can't really claim to have. Are your parents really proud of the position that you've taken? Have you ever gone so far that they've been like, Zach, like, you need to chill out, dude?
No.
like you're pushing too hard? Or have they always really promoted this side of the work that you do?
I mean, I do this because, I mean, they're not spokespeople on these issues, but I've always had these positions because they believe the same things and would bring them up around me. And I was the one who grabbed onto it and went with it. But, like, I heard about this because my parents would complain, why do we have a creationism law?
That's interesting. So you grew up, like, you weren't... Were you a big science fanatic when you were a kid? Was it something where evolution fascinated you and you never had been exposed to the idea of creationism? Did you grow up with any religion at all?
My sister's going to kill me for telling the story. She hates when it's out. But when I was a little kid, for some reason, I always really liked the Scopes trial. I can't remember. When I was like 10 years old, I kept watching this video about it over and over and over. I can't even remember what it was, except that it was about the Scopes trial. But when I was a little kid, and my mom told this to the Houston Press, and my sister was really angry at her. But
so it's already out there.
Yeah, but she doesn't like it being repeated. Anyway, we were in the car, and for some reason, I got in an argument with her over where people came from, and I was shouting at her that we came from monkeys, and she was shouting that we came from God, just back and forth when we were like 6, 7 years old.
We don't blame her.
Yeah, and that's so for some reason it has been something that I've always cared about. But
interesting.
I'm not sure why I care more about evolution than anything else. Or at least got into it.
And so your parents just raised you in a secular home, or were you guys kind of like cafeteria Christians?
We were exposed to a lot of different things growing up, is basically like it's always been sort of taken for granted that things like evolution is real, like in my home, like that was just where it was. And I don't really know how to explain it. Like, I mean, I've been to plenty of different churches.
It's interesting because I know that, like, sometimes when I don't even know if we've met in person yet or if we've just always been like passing like ships in the night, but we've definitely spoken at the same conferences and things. And one place that I do a lot of work in my activism is in atheist activism and skepticism activism. And there's a lot of obviously crossover there. And so it's interesting because you are probably put on a pedestal as an atheist role model, but it doesn't seem like your message is necessarily an atheist message.
I mean, and getting into the nitty gritty, the reality is that doesn't resonate very well in Louisiana. And yeah, it's certainly not going to get you the votes when it comes down to it, like in the legislature. So, I mean, the message...
Yeah, so it's like coming in firebrand is actually going to hurt your cause.
So I generally take the position... I usually, on message, it's the standard Stephen Gould, NCSE, non-overlapping magisterium. Religion and science are separate spheres. You don't have religion in the science class. Is generally the most effective message just for anyone listening if they want to keep creationism out of the class.
Yeah, yeah, because it really, they can coexist. We've seen examples of them coexisting in many progressive communities. And obviously, across the country, we have had an established curriculum that doesn't include creationism. It's in the fucking Constitution.
I mean, you say that.
It's just crazy. It's like it was this idea that we were founded on that we were not going to give any preferential treatment.
If you listen to Donald Trump and a few of the rest of them, we weren't founded on that.
Yeah. And I think that sometimes is a problem when it comes
to
the...
If you listen to Ben Carson.
Oh, my God. When it comes to the skill of debaters, right? So one thing that I don't do in my work is I do not debate creationists and I don't debate Christians because I don't think I will win. Not because I don't think I know more and not because I don't think that I'm right, but because I'm not that good in a debate setting. You know what I mean? And so I don't want to open that up to allowing somebody who is saying things that aren't valid to say them better than I could. And so I think that this is something that we see a lot in this push-pull about our First Amendment protections, is that people argue that, like, separation of church and state isn't really in the Constitution.
And of course, like, and that's such a thought. Like, it's like, because the exact words aren't there.
Uh-huh.
It's just like, and this is why we need to teach reading comprehension in some of our classes, too. I mean, it's like... If you can't read the First Amendment and understand that there is a separation of church and state, you have a problem. But But then we're talking about people who say that, well, many scientists think that aliens made the pyramids, but it was God, and it was made to store grain. So that's sort of what we're dealing with.
It's so frustrating when you're trying to come to a middle ground, when you're trying to come to a place of understanding between two groups where one is fortifying their argument with evidence and with, like, rationality and, you know, the scientific method, and another group is trying to fortify their argument with this divine sort of proclamation that actually colors everything. I mean, we've all struggled with this. Anybody listening to this podcast has struggled with this. I do. My parents are religious. You know, I was raised in a Mormon household. So I had a whole other issue kind of growing up trying to reconcile religion and science, because Mormons are weird and they're very pro-science too. I don't think many Mormons would want to see creation taught in the classroom, but they're very religious.
Yeah.
And so it's this interesting thing where when somebody is religious in a non-academic way, you know, this idea of God put, you know, touching all of life and life being created in his image is so central to the belief that you almost can't extract it to have a rational conversation.
Yeah. I mean, and it's also, it's one of the, and it's really digging into some weird creationist psychology. One of the most fascinating things to me is, I don't know if you've ever heard, I bet you have, which is, this is actually, of course, is why have humans stopped evolving? Like, has anyone ever said that to you?
Oh, yeah. People think humans aren't evolving.
And it's
anymore.
Such a fascinating thing where it reflects their worldview, even when they try and understand evolution, where it's humans are still the top of the food chain. And it's this hierarchical, you've got your great chain of being the rocks and then the trees and then the monkeys and then the humans and the angels. And even if it's evolution happened, clearly we've been evolving towards the humans because we're the top of everything. And And it's just, if you take that away, you're striking at their sort of sense of superiority and sense of who they are. It's really
sense
interesting.
Sense of purpose.
Yeah. It's always...
It is. I mean...
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead. Yay, Skype!
Yeah. It's always interesting how like everything is this very hierarchical, like almost a religious mindset, even when they think about evolution.
Oh yeah, I mean, I feel like you can look back at big sort of culture shifts in science. These really large paradigm shifts when we started to understand things differently, and they all. You know, it's you can kind of simplify them and say, well, first we had a religious viewpoint of these things, and then science informed us that the religious viewpoint is not the way to look at it. But another way to say it is that, like, all of these paradigm shifts reminded us over decades and millennia that we're not that fucking special. Like, it took all these major shifts to be like, oh, wait, the sun doesn't revolve around us? Oh, wait, we're only one galaxy amongst, you know, billions? Every single time, it's like a new little thing that reminds us that we are animals, just like all the rest of the animals, and that the special place we hold in the universe is only determined by our own psychology and our own ability to kind of reflect on our place. That's what makes us so special.
It's interesting when you also jump into this, because the same people who deny science also generally hate accurate history. And what's fascinating is there's this old story, 2010 New York Times article, that actually the first person who told me about this article was Don McElroy, the creationist crazy. Actually, he gets along with me really well, is always very sweet to me, which is kind of funny. But he's the old creationist, and I call him crazy, but I get along with him very well, which you'd never expect. He said, go read this article because it gets my mindset very well. And basically in this article, it talks about how that modern history is no longer this sort of hierarchical stack of white Christian male hero figures. Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt. And it's always been white, in American history, white male hero figures. And now we have what was described as a hodgepodge of minorities and causes that have really destroyed that solid thread and really torn down the worldview of a lot of these people who also oppose the science. It's fascinating to see the similar sort of hierarchical structured thinking that the moment you kick out a brick sort of causes a total meltdown.
And it's funny. It's funny how much, that kind of thinking is. It's like the minute that you're outside of it, the minute that you can get out from that fog and you can look at it from the outside, it's so obviously a trap. It's so obviously this place where these individuals are very much stuck, and they're very much unable to, I don't know, appreciate all of the wonderful things that the universe has to offer with regards to other cultures, other genders, I don't know, like other food, like anything that's not this standard kind of white bread mentality. It's and this like desperate death grip that certain individuals in this country are holding on to that power struggle. It's become comical to individuals on the outside.
Yeah.
You know, it's the butt of a joke. And what a horrible thing to be in on that joke and to be confused right now, like desperately trying to hold on to something that's so obviously not worth holding on to, but not knowing where to go from there because there's not a protected culture for you to find yourself in.
I mean, the sad part is it's like you still have, because so many people are holding on to it, you have, I think we've just finally gotten below 40% of the country believes the Earth was formed in the last 10,000 years. I think is the latest Gallup poll. We finally broken out. It used to be for the last 30 years between 40 and 48%, and I think we've finally gotten under that. So maybe we're making some progress, but it's pretty dark when you look at the numbers of how much of America thinks like this.
It makes me wonder sometimes, though, because You know, I often think of the fact that the hardcore, you know, line in the sand creationists and are often more kind of the political style of creationists. They're more outliers. They're more individuals who try to push what we think of as like a fundamentalist Christian view, a super, super right-wing Christian view, is not really that representative of the constituency. And that the constituency is always just a little bit more moderate than the leaders that they're putting into office. I've always had this, like, this, I guess it's a belief, really, more than anything, that it's a, hang on just a second, sorry.
Killer, stop it.
I'm totally not editing that out, by the way.
Yeah.
Calm down.
I mean, I just had to put my puppy outside.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw, I tweeted at you a picture of, my roommate, actually, it's his puppy, and so I'll have to leave her
hilarious.
When I move. But she was trying to eat the headset case you sent me.
Oh, puppies, they're such jerks. I'm going to retweet that right now. But yeah, this oh, fuck, now I've completely forgotten my train of thought. What were we talking about?
The fact that people, you're hoping people are more moderate than the political types are.
That, like, I mean, obviously when it comes to, we hear the term trickle down and it makes us think of, like, Reaganomics, and that's mm-hmm. not what I'm talking about at all, because as we know that's total bullshit and doesn't work.
Voodoo.
But this idea that sort of the media, that the individual political leaders actually oftentimes do set agendas, and the public kind of goes along with them so long as they don't pull them too far out of their comfort zone. But often it's only when we have a revolution, when we have some sort of very severe break with what the individuals in power are trying to push upon us, that we actually see that kind of conflict and that we see people trying to vote out. It's just that we're lazy. I think that's a big part of it, because, you know, the number one predictor of getting reelected is that you've been elected before.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't mean, that has nothing to do with your politics.
Yeah. Although it is interesting, and I think this is where we can jump back to Louisiana, with our new governor, who, he's a Democrat. He's more moderate than Jindal, who's the current governor, or Vitter, the U.S. senator, who, I just, it's always worth mentioning with Vitter, he's a family values Republican who used a government phone to call prostitutes from the floor of the U.S. House.
Why is it always the family value guys that
you
do that?
You gotta love how he told Bill Clinton to resign for having an affair, but while he was busy calling prostitutes. So, just worth mentioning. So, he's the other guy who both Vitter and Jindal are both creationists. Vitter actually tried to fund the creationist lobbying group with $100,000 of U.S. government money. Luckily failed. But, so these are the people who we could have had an office. But
that's
the
true.
Democrat, his new chief of staff, is the sponsor of the creationism law, who's a Democrat. And so it is more mixed up in Louisiana, and I'm not actually sure how it's going to work out, because John Bel Edwards, the new governor, has said he's not for creationism, but his chief political enforcer is sort of the head creationist was the head creationist in the legislature. So,
it's so odd, the decisions, these political decisions that are often made, I think, for very calculated and you know, prescribed reasons, but from the outside, it just leaves us scratching our heads. Like, you were saying that your father was the chief of staff to both a Republican and a Democratic governor. That's weird to me.
Yeah. I mean, compliment him. He was very, very effective. He got a start for
it's
a Republican.
It's great.
The Democrat hired him immediately. Like, I mean, I don't think he expected to be hired. And he was thrilled to take the job. But she said, I want to keep you on, after she won that election.
Because she saw how effective he was and how much he really ran the room. Interesting. Yeah, because it seems so funny that I've always felt this way. Like, I'm not you mentioned before that you're a registered Democrat. I'm not. I'm independent because I think the Democrats are too, like, right-wing for me. And so, and which is also, but being a science communicator and, like yourself, somebody who advocates for science policy, sometimes
well, there's
I
always
have
GMOs.
Exactly. I'm very pro-GMO. I'm very pro-vaccine. So that makes a lot of my viewers and listeners scratch their heads a little bit. So for that reason alone, I think it's important to me that I be independent, because no one party captures my thoughts. But it is interesting how much our two-party system is kind of the same party.
Yeah.
Like, we see extremism on the right, I think. We don't often see extremism on the left. The left is pretty moderate, especially if we're just talking about the Democrats. And there's a lot of crossover. Like, we're all kind of slaves to big oil.
Yeah. And I always, because I keep having to remind people who get mad at me, they're like, you're too mean to Republicans. I'm like, I never compliment the Democrats. I don't really spend that. I'll criticize them every once in a while for GMOs mostly. And that, of course, just like you said, makes a lot of people who like me get really angry. But but mostly, I compliment good Republicans. I've been, and so a lot of things Lindsey Graham says scare me, but he's been great on climate change. And so I spend a lot of time complimenting Lindsey Graham. And I spend a lot of time, anything John Huntsman says, I usually love. And so I spend a lot of time complimenting. He's super pro-climate change. He's pro-evolution. He sort of lost.
Yeah.
He was a non-factor when he ran for president, in part because he was so pro-science. But
he was just not conservative enough for them.
Yeah, but I love to promote people like that, and I never really do that with Democrats because the consensus is usually that they're more – again, there's always the GMO problem. I mean,
yeah.
I like Bernie, but again, he's still wrong on GMOs. But mostly Democrats have their shit together, it's sort of seen as. And
so when there is a Democrat that you find is not being hard-lined enough on the science issue, you're going to – like, not only is he going to get burned, but you're going to, like, speak out about that.
Yeah. And so – and it's always – it's that's always interesting because I just posted a reminder on my Facebook. I was like, next time you complain about me being too mean about Republicans, just remember, I also am go out of my way to compliment them when they're doing the right thing. Just I want to encourage good behavior in the Republican Party as much as I can.
And there are plenty this is the thing that frustrates me. There are plenty of Republicans that I meet, especially when I go home to Texas, where most people are Republican, that are solid, science-loving, thinking, non-crazy conservatives. Like, they might be Christian, but they're not, like, Christian. You know, they're not, like, hardcore.
Very well.
Yeah, like evangelical, you know, or maybe they are evangelical, but they're not biblical literalists.
Actually, there's even some evangelicals who are wonderful on climate change because they see it. They're not the Dominionist strand that thinks only God can destroy the earth. So who cares what we do to the environment? There's some who are great and say we have to protect God's creation. And
that has to be a minority. Don't you think? The people who literally think that humans can't affect the earth because only God can affect that kind of change.
I hope
that
it's
has
minority,
to be a minority.
But I mean, the problem is we see these through sort of filtered glasses where whenever someone, because you see, it's always a congressman who says that. Like every few months, there'll be a new one who says something similar. And it makes a ton of news because it's completely crazy. And so maybe we're just seeing it through tinted glasses that you don't see the non-crazy people who believe that, yes, of course, things we do can affect the earth. Because
I think that's
taken for granted.
That's why I say that my hope is that the majority of the constituency is actually a little bit more moderate than the individuals that they're electing.
How the primary process works.
I know the primary process is so detrimental to American politics. It's like, let's get as crazy as we possibly can. Let's go as far right as we possibly can to prove that we're the best Republican. And the truth of the matter is, I think it's going to backfire this year. I really do. I think this is going to be one of the first times when it's such a clown car that we're actually going to see a more moderate selection.
I miss Mitt Romney. Where is Mitt Romney?
Exactly. But I don't think Trump is going to get elected. It's kind of like, for me, I could give a shit either way. Because if they elect a more moderate Republican, yay on them. And if they elect Trump
then we have Hillary.
Yeah, then we have Hillary immediately. There's no way she's going to win. So, knock on wood. I think that they're kind of burying themselves. Yeah, exactly. and that's helpful for us. But it does, I don't know, this idea of the Republicans that I know, and I was raised in a very religious family, are just more rational than what I would think Republicans were if I lived overseas in Europe and was only reading the headline.
Well, yeah, exactly. And you see, like in Texas, I think our lieutenant governor's race was like the petri dish of this, where it was where the primary decides who's going to be our next lieutenant governor, the Republican primary in Texas. Mm-hmm. And so the most extreme person wins. So all the Republicans were creationists. And you've got the guy who won it, Dan Patrick, who is a radio shock jock, who gets out there and they ask, are you for creationism in the schools? And they all say yes. And that's the next guy, who the current lieutenant governor, who Patrick beat, and said, are you for creationism in the schools? He says, yes, that's Patrick. And Patrick says, I'm not just for it in schools. We should herald and triumph it in schools. And it just had to be over the top on everything. Like, heralding creationism in the schools? What does that even mean?
Yeah, that's like, it's a great platform. And not just that, it's like, it's blatantly against the law.
Say that, but they've never cared.
Yeah. I feel like at least, you know, I grew up in Plano, Texas, which is a suburb of Dallas.
And
it's
I know some schools in Plano teaching
suburb.
Creationism.
Yes. But I felt very lucky that even though I'm not sure I had the most solid evolution education, I know I didn't have a creationism education. I know that as I got older and as I pursued more biology at the collegiate level, of course, and at like upper like AP level courses, I was able to get access to real science. But even when I was young, I think that I was somewhat protected. Granted, it was a different time. I'm about a decade older than you. I'm exactly a decade older than you. And so that is a difference that, you know, I didn't live during, I think, the craziest peak of this movement. But I guess that there are, you know, I think of this town I grew up in as being a little bit more metropolitan. Maybe that's the difference. There are a lot of very small towns.
Well, speaking of Plano, though, do you know Louisville?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's in between. I went to college at the University of North Texas. Okay. So you drive through Louisville on your way to Denton from Plano.
So what's interesting, I don't know if you ever saw this, but the largest charter program in Texas, and this is just digging into weird details, based out of Louisville, is creationist. It gets about $100 million a year of public money. It's called Responsive Education Solutions. And they used to teach that evolution was dogma and unproved theory, and that leading scientists dispute the age of the Earth. They also, and this is fun, in their history class, some of their history books say feminism forced women to turn to the government as a surrogate husband, and the residents of the Philippines are pagans in various levels of civilization.
What?
Yeah, so this is what they were teaching. The science class, they were teaching that evolution was dogma and introducing creationism as an alternate theory up until January 2014. The history stayed the same. After this came out, they changed some of their science textbooks, but still teach things that are like humans have. I forget exactly how many neurons humans have in a brain, but they're like, how did humans get that many neurons? There's not enough time for that to happen, and there's a new species that emerges every 10,000 years, and there's only been 600,000 years since mammals came out, so we can only have 600 species of mammals, and since there's more, scientists don't know how we got there, and that's still in their textbooks. And they get $100 million a year. And what's interesting about this program is they came out of, did you ever hear the whole voucher schools teach that the Loch Ness Monster disproves evolution thing?
No. Which voucher schools?
So there's these schools called Accelerated Christian Education Schools, which receive state, the schools that use this curriculum to teach science and history. And they receive, voucher schools receive state money, but they're private schools, and they take public school students, for anyone who doesn't know.
And does this happen, by the way, in every state, or do only some states have these charter/voucher programs?
So Slate actually has a great map of all the different, and this is not all of them, but many of the schools that are either voucher or public or traditional public or charter schools that we know about teaching creationism. Although they put for Tennessee and Louisiana every public school, just because of the law, they said can teach creationism.
Oh, because they can, but that doesn't mean they do. Okay.
Yeah, but they also have every voucher school that we found that put on their website. And of course, this doesn't mean that this is limited, because there's many other schools that are probably teaching creationism and just don't put on their website things like scientists are sinful men. and we don't. And oh, evolution is the way of the heathen, which was from two of the different schools, one in Florida, one in Louisiana, that were teaching creationism.
Oh my God.
These are all the schools that are receiving public money. And yeah, so anyway, the responsive ed program in Texas actually came out of this accelerated Christian education voucher program where one of their staff members explained in a blog post that it was wonderful how they were bringing religion to all these private school kids, but they really needed to bring it to the public school kids, and so they were going to start a charter program to bring religion to the public school kids. And
oh my God, he just like publicly blogged about...
Yeah.
Oh my God, and it's just so crazy. It's just blatant. It's not even trying to back channel and have a different narrative.
Like it wasn't on the school website, but it was on the blog of one of their vice directors or whatever of the program. And it's a shame to me because I think this is... I wish the charter movement would police their own. Because I think this hurts charter advocates when you have the largest charter chain in Texas teaching creationism. And
of course it does, because a lot of people see charter schools as a way to improve education.
Yeah.
Yeah, as a way to, you know, if you're living in a place where there's not a lot of money going into your schools and your schools are dangerous, that you can kind of group together and you can say, I'm a parent who cares a lot about my child's education and I want to have a say in the quality of the education that they get.
Of course, then, while we're on charters, we can't help say traditional publics aren't that much better in many cases. Yeah. About creationism, because you have Bossier, which we've already talked about, Ouachita Parish in Louisiana, where I got a hold of one of their science teachers' creationism PowerPoints. You've got Livingston Parish, which one of their school board members helpfully explained that someone needed to take a stand for Jesus, and they didn't care if they got sued by the ACLU. So,
wow. You know, I'm just remembering, and I feel like I would feel remiss if I didn't say this, but I did have an incredible biology teacher in eighth grade when I was in high school named Mrs. Silva. She just popped into my head and was like, I taught you evolution. She just told me that in my brain. And I was like, fuck, you're right. And so I feel like I have to say that because she was actually really amazing. And we did a lot of good comparative anatomy. We did some great dissection. And I think that she was just young, and she was like, she didn't give a fuck. Like, for her, it was more important that she teach what she knows is true and what she knows matters, and that we get a good education, than any of the blowback, which she may have gotten, you know, even in an affluent kind of what we think of as a little bit more sophisticated metropolitan part of Texas. You still have people with these hardline views.
Well, you're from Dallas and I'm from Houston, so I'm not sure if I think of Dallas the same way you do.
Yeah. Well, Houston is the biggest city, you know? It's like one of the biggest cities in the country. It's the biggest city in Texas. But I also think of Houston. I think of Dallas, and I could be totally wrong when I say this, as being somewhat more homogenous.
Yeah.
I think of Houston as having way richer pockets and way poorer pockets.
I mean, every city in the country has segregation problems, and I think Houston is better than Austin when we're getting to bashing on different Texas cities.
I can't talk much. I live in L.A. now.
Yeah, so. But we're the most diverse city in the country, and we're minority-majority with a lesbian mayor, so we get cred for that.
And nobody gives Houston cred, right? Because they always think about, Austin's liberal and everything else sucks.
They say, yeah, exactly. I'm like, come on. I've always tried to be an ambassador for Houston because, I mean, I live in an ugly city, but there's a lot to love about it.
There's some great museums in Houston.
Great museums, great restaurants.
The Natural History Museum in Houston is amazing. What I hate most about Houston is the mosquitoes. I got to tell you, I love living in L.A.
I grew up in Louisiana, so...
Yeah, you're used to it.
It's a slight improvement, actually.
We're actually like going kind of long, but there's a couple more things I want to hit with you if you're okay with that.
Yeah.
I noticed that, you know, you've always had a mission, a kind of core mission to repeal this creationism law in Louisiana. And you've worked really hard at that, even from the time you were very young, helping to motivate people and, you know, get the signatures that you needed and get the support that you needed. But obviously, that's not all there is to be done. And it seems like lately, if you look at the work that you've been doing, and granted, you've also been a full-time college student, so you've been busy. But if you look at the work that you've been doing, it's focused on this charter voucher problem, this idea that there's now this loophole, this back door for individuals to get public funding to pay for creationist initiatives.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just, honestly, it's one piece of the puzzle, which is charters and vouchers. And I think vouchers are unconstitutional when it comes down to it, that you give money to a religious school, that's a violation of the separation of church and state. And when it comes to charters, they're under the exact same requirements that public schools have. It's just that same with traditional publics, there's no real enforcement. And we need to have more when there's a, and this is going to upset a lot of people. When we have a bad teacher teaching creationism, they should be fired. And I'm all for a social safety net and making sure we take care of these teachers, but they shouldn't be teaching science class.
Well, also, a bad teacher shouldn't be teaching.
Yeah.
I'm not upset by that. I
But
think that we need good educators in
yeah.
place. And if you have a bad teacher who is like abusive or who is neglectful or who is making decisions that are against the law, they shouldn't be teaching.
I just find I upset everyone when it comes to education
I
because I'm
know,
all
because they are our heroes. I
yeah.
get it though. I mean, they're my mom's a teacher. Like, my
yeah.
mom's a Spanish teacher. I grew up with a, you know, she was a teacher my whole life. And I'm a teacher to some extent. I worked for many years as a teacher and I loved it. Granted, at the college level, not the high school level. So it was a little easier for me. But I teaching is so fundamentally important, which is why I think we have to be hard on our teachers. I think that good teachers want us to be hard on them.
And you upset the left when you talk about accountability, though, and the right when you talk about how bad vouchers are and charter accountability. It's just, it's like, it's such a shame.
It's because we've gotten to a point where everybody just listens to the rhetoric and they don't think about what it means. And there's nuance in all of these different positions, which is why I think the two-party system is really poisonous because it makes it too easy not to have to think.
I'm with you there.
And yeah, and so the more that we can think about what the actual outcomes and disagree with our part, you know, that's what it means though to be
And
patriotic.
to
I
be
think that
brave.
that's something, yeah, that was totally I don't know, like passed over. Like, people think that you're being a heretic or something if you question your government. No, it's the most patriotic thing you can do is to ensure that the Constitution is being upheld. It's the most patriotic thing you can do to push your leaders to actually be good representatives of what you want. It doesn't mean that you're like, you know, committing treason. Those are two different things. It's like you hear about it with the with the whole argument of like support our troops, you know, and a lot of people are like, the best way to support our troops is to give them proper fucking health
Yeah.
care and not to send them to wars that they shouldn't be fighting anyway. That's me supporting my troops. But somehow, if you say anything
Yeah.
about it, it's just a red herring.
Or, I mean, similarly on the gun violence, this is, it's not exactly
Oh,
political, but it's
yeah.
the don't politicize it, don't talk about it, we should just give our prayers right now. And it's like, I'm sorry, like, I don't want to be shot, I don't want my friend shot, I don't want 14 kids in the disability center shot.
Yeah.
Like, let's talk
And you know
about
what?
it.
If I find myself in that position, your prayers, I mean, I appreciate the thought, but they're not going to fucking help me.
I don't want to die
I don't
from.
want to die, exactly. I want something. I want some sort of safety net in place. I want good legislation that will prevent me from dying.
Well, what we've just put in place in Texas is, I think it's open carry on college campuses right now in Texas.
Holy shit.
Yep. It's
When did that happen?
last legislative session, it goes into effect next school year.
What, doesn't everybody remember Charles Whitman?
No.
Like, how, this is the thing, you're right. I think we often forget.
Except that, and it was terrible, is I can't tell you how many times people, like, I mean, people are sort of making the dark jokes about, like, well, I mean, it's UT.
Yeah, it's like they know. Oh my God. And so that's why I think what you were saying is so important. I think it's so interesting that you chose to study history instead of science or poli sci. You know, my background is science. You chose to study history as an academic pursuit. And those are the two things that, to me, stick out in my mind when I watch, you know, the revisionist documentary, when we're talking about textbooks being rewritten. It's history and science. Those are the areas where individuals with a religious agenda try to rewrite things.
Yeah.
Because those are the things that don't sit well. Because those are the things that change. You know what I mean? Those are the things that don't do well being dogmatic because they're always evolving and we're always learning more.
Yeah. Jumping in, also, if anyone hasn't watched The Revisionaries, you absolutely have to watch it.
Oh, thank you for correcting me, too. The Revisionaries, right? Did I say The Revisionists?
I don't even remember, but yeah.
The Revisionaries, and it was a documentary that I know PBS bought at least for a while. So yeah. You may be able to find it on the PBS app. If not, I think it was like a licensing thing.
Yeah, it was
though,
Independent so Lens, PBS, I think.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. So if you can't find it on the PBS app, like on your Apple TV, that's how I watched it. You might be able to find it just on the website or just search for Revisionaries because, yeah, it's a great documentary.
It's about the Texas textbook adoptions and I mean, this stuff is real life because I've sat through these hearings and seen it. And it's basically like crazy thing after crazy thing being said by people who are in charge of selecting the textbooks for the entire country.
Yeah, because it's kind of like when we think about emissions testing or we think about automobile standards, how goes California, goes the country when it comes to textbooks?
It goes Texas.
These decisions are made in Texas, yeah.
We have so many students.
Shit, that's exactly not where we want these decisions to be made. Well, Zach, so you literally just finished school.
Yeah.
What's next for you? What are you going to do
that
with
is
all your time?
Actually what I've been trying to figure out. I want to keep working as a reporter. I've really enjoyed what I've done for Slate, which is a bunch of investigative work about creationism and the religious right.
Nice.
I haven't figured out where exactly I'm going yet, except I know I'm moving out of Houston. It's really the only thing that is clear, and I've got a few months to figure out exactly what I want to do.
Hey, you can come visit us in sunny California.
Yeah, hopefully.
You might just love it.
except for the drought.
Yeah, that's tough. But you know what? We're getting smart. Even we're hip to the drought. We're learning a lot.
Shaming
about
the water users.
Oh, yeah. Like when you drive through West Hollywood, all of the medians have signs on them that say, due to the drought, we've stopped watering the grass. Like the grass is all dead in L.A. It's awesome. Like nobody's allowed to water their lawns anymore. So a lot of people are getting hip to it and getting artificial turf, or they just have desertscape. And the people who do have lawns, you kind of shame them. Like when you see somebody with a lush green lawn, you're like, you bastard.
They actually kind of remind me. I mean, it's sort of similar where it's not really shaming, but. So we live in New Orleans right now, which hasn't fully worked out its recycling post-Katrina. And so my mom is really obsessed with recycling. And we have family friends in Baton Rouge, and one of them runs a local radio station. So I was doing an interview with him, and my mom just said, well, why don't you go up to Baton Rouge, give him this jar. It's his jar. He wants it. And I was like, sure, it's just this random jar. And so I bring it to him. Like, my mom says this is yours. And he's like, no, it's not. Eventually figure out that she had wanted him to recycle the jar and just hadn't bothered to tell me beyond, this is his jar, he wants it.
This is his jar, give it back. Yeah.
Yeah. Just like, I mean, sort of not the same thing as shaming, but that's what that made me think of.
That's really funny. I can kind of see where you get your
views.
Cynicism.
Yeah.
I love that. Your mom sounds super cool. Well, Zach, this has been so fun. I'm really interested to keep following the work that you're doing, especially the investigative work, but also the activism that you're doing. Welcome to the freelance life, baby.
Oh,
it's tough, but
so not fun.
It's you know, for some people it's really hard. For some people they love it, and I think do both. You know, like my recommendation would be have a staff job for a while and then try freelancing for a while. I can't have a staff job. I absolutely hate it. I love freelancing, even though things about it are fucking horrible. I get to do lots of different stuff and work for lots of different people, and I feel really fulfilled. So I definitely recommend trying it both ways and seeing what works better for you. But I'm really glad that you're on team education and that you're on team science. You've been a huge warrior. I can't thank you enough for all of the hard work that you've done. I know my listeners feel the same way. Hey, before we go, can I bother you to answer the famous two questions that I ask everybody who comes on the podcast? All right. So I generally say in this order only so we don't leave on a bummer note. But the first question is, when you think about the future, what is the thing that, you know, worries you the most? What is the thing that keeps you up at night the most? And on the flip side of that, what are you really optimistic about and hopeful for?
So what worries me the most, honestly, is science funding. And this is It's really, I mean, evolution and climate change are pretty intangible compared to movements like Black Lives Matter or like the LGBT rights movement. But that's one that worries me because we've really cut a ton of funding to science from the U.S. government. And, you know, I like the things that we discover through basic research. Like that yeah. improves our lives. And it's really, I think, when it comes down to it, long term, the investment that pays off the most for making the most people happy and live the longest. So I'm really freaked out by the fact that we've cut so much funding, and it's basically, it's just happened when I think we should be increasing funding, and that depresses me.
Yeah, it's really short-sighted.
Yeah.
Thing
that
we operate.
I am most optimistic about, really just that maybe the number, and I want to see more polling on this, but maybe the numbers on evolution and the numbers on climate change are definitely changing in our favor. And that's another thing that scares the shit out of me is what's happening to our climate. But the numbers, and maybe it's that we've had so much of a media blitz from the Louisiana creationism law to the Bill Nye debate, the numbers might finally be changing, especially among millennials when it comes to evolution and climate change and accepting the reality of science. And so in the next few years, we're going to be able to see if this is actually holding true, but we might actually be winning. And that's yeah. making me really optimistic.
Me too. Ditto,
yeah.
I say.
Also, one last sort of weird story, which is, I mean, I'd followed your work, and I think I talked to you a few times, but like the...
I think we've like, you know, tweeted before, and yeah.
But the funniest thing was, in 2013, when I was on Bill Maher's show, after the show, he comes up to me, he's like, "Man, you really have to meet my ex." And I was like, "I've never heard someone say that before."
Like, that's the weirdest thing ever, but it's kind of so Bill.
Yeah.
Because even after our breakup, he was always such a big like supporter of my work, and just he's always been just really amazing in that way, and he's just endlessly loyal. Well, what a Bill thing.
He also says it while rolling up my just sort of grabs my sleeves and starts rolling them up. And says that. And I was just like, this is sort of surreal. But
so we got to, well, we've still only met online.
Yeah.
We got to meet in person, Zach.
One day.
You have to come to L.A.
Yeah. Next time I'm in L.A. I haven't been in L.A. for a few years, actually.
Yeah. But just the next time it's like getting to be too cold, even in Texas, just come on out to L.A. It's a great place to go in like January.
Yeah.
I welcome everyone. You'll have fun, yeah. Really. Like when you just can't handle the cold, come out to L.A. We have no season. Well, hey, so that people can follow your work, you know, you mentioned that you've been reporting for Slate. Why don't you tell people where they can find the work that you're doing, how they can find you on social media?
So, yeah, I'm on Twitter and Facebook as Zach Coplin, and you can follow me on either of those. And then most of my recent writing has been for Slate magazine. And so if you just Google me and Slate, you get to – if you want to read really depressing things about – schools teaching creationism and be really angry at what's happening in schools, go Google me on Slate.
Yeah, you guys, do it. You'll learn something and maybe you'll get fired up too and want to join the cause if you haven't already.
Start your own campaign. And also, you can, it's really easy. You can send a public records request to your local school district. You just send them an email that says public records request and ask for every email about creationism and you may find something.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And in that
cool.
case,
how long does that usually take if you do that?
Depends on the school district and depends on how much they want to make your life hard.
but legally, they have to do that.
Legally, it depends on state by state. In Louisiana, we have some of the best laws. They are allowed 5 days to tell us and tell us how much it'll cost if they're going to charge us anything. Texas, it's about 10 days. But they're much. I've had a school district in Texas try and say it'll cost you about $10,000 to get these records, which is not reasonable. And other places, it might be a full month before they give you the records. But either way, they have to give them to you because they're government records, and that's open to the public. So
yeah, that's really good to know. And yeah, so they have access to all of those.
And anyone can do this. And tell the NCSC, like we all are very curious what's happening school by school.
For sure, guys. We talk about citizen science on the show a lot. This is a cool way to do some citizen journalism, too. Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, Zach. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. It was a blast.
I know. It's been like so long. You were like my number one on the list when I started podcasting. I don't know how it took this long. So I'm really glad that we were finally able to do it. And hey, everyone listening, thank you so much for coming back week after week. I'm looking forward to the next time we all get together to talk nerdy.